Welcome to the Not Just a Pony Ride podcast, presented to you by Hetcher University. If you've landed here, you're probably passionate about how horses help people. Whether you're an instructor, therapist, in the business, or have experienced equine-assisted services yourself, we're glad you're here. Join us as we talk about the benefits, the science, to-dos, how-tos, and all of the reasons why what we do is so much more than just a pony ride. And now, from the Hetcher campus in Gretna, Nebraska, here's your host, occupational therapist Katie King.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone! At least for those of you listening in real time, I guess. We wanted to take this week and really just kick off this whole holiday season with just letting everyone know how extra thankful we are for our EAS community and all of our listeners. So I have a couple of exciting gifts for you today. First, let's do a giveaway announcement. So if you're a member of our exclusive Facebook community group called Not Just a Pony Ride, you've seen a post there asking for your questions. We really want to encourage interactions from you guys so that we can give you, the listeners, everything that you want to hear about. So at any rate, I promised a free t-shirt to a random listener who asked a question, and I am excited to tell Amanda I that you won a t-shirt. So thank you for your question about eGala. Keep listening because you might get your wish in the upcoming episodes. If you too want to win a t-shirt, go over to the Facebook page and click on the link to ask the question or ask it in the comments, and maybe you could win a t-shirt too. Okay, the second gift I'm giving you guys has to do with today's episode. Gosh, this is such an important episode. I think we've all had those participants that would benefit so much from our lovely equine partners, but they really do struggle to transition to riding or interacting with the horse even at all. So how do we help them? Well, Kelly Bolish, our mental health practitioner, and myself are going to tackle that topic for you today. While we are giving you the gift of knowledge in today's episode, I'm also giving you something more. So this episode is actually only a 20-minute excerpt from a much larger, longer conversation that her and I had on a webinar recently. So we are offering that to you, the full-length PATH CEU-eligible webinar, for only $5 because you are all loyal podcast listeners. So the rest of the public has to pay more for it, but we wanted to take this week to thank you. So scroll down to the show notes and find the link for how to access it, or go over to our Facebook page and I'll post the link there as well. Hurry though, because this offer is only gonna happen through 2022. So if you're listening to this in 2023, don't worry, you're not out of luck. You can find this webinar at hetcheruniversity.org under the on-demand webinars. Okay, let's get this show on the road. Enjoy. We are excited to get into this topic today. It can be definitely a tricky one, but one I think we see often in our field. So let's get into it. Kelly is with me today. Kelly, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, my name is Kelly Bolish. I am a licensed mental health practitioner, licensed professional counselor, and licensed drug and alcohol counselor in the state of Nebraska. I have been a practitioner for 13 years and have worked in several different capacities within the behavioral health field. And here at Hetcher, I have the opportunity to be able to facilitate individual and group co-facilitation services.
Very good. Yes, you've started a number of good groups for us for mental health. All right, and I'm Katie Ott. Check that new last name. You know me as Katie King, but I just got married, so that's on there. Occupational therapist and also a project coordinator and PATH international instructor here at Hetcher. I have been in behavioral health as well for a while now. I really took my occupational therapy degree and did some continuing education and some further credentialing for specifically those with on the autism spectrum, as well as ADHD and a number of other kind of behavioral diagnoses that we see. So I'm excited today to talk about this. I think it's something we could all grow in, including myself. So our objectives today, we really want to get into how we help participants that are struggling to adapt to this new environment. We're not going to get super clinical today. We're going to try and keep it more broad and open and really just teach about the different signs that we might see and how do we really help our participants when they're struggling. We're going to lean heavily on this and pronounce it, Kelly. How do you pronounce it?
Prochaska and DiClemente's Six Stages of Change.
Okay, yes. So we are going to use that kind of as our bridge, right? Kind of as our structure for going forward here. We are going to go through kind of what each of those stages look like and what tools can we use to help our reach our participants when they are in each one of those stages, as well as what does success really look like for our participants that are struggling, adapting to these changes and really struggling to connect with their horses. So let's get into it. Change can be hard, but resistance to change is normal, right?
Absolutely.
I think considering our environment, so we're in a brand new place, new people, new activities, new routines. It's all new. So if you have a participant that already struggles with these things at school or at home, coming to the barn or coming to your facility is not going to be any different. It's going to be, you know, something that is a change. And then not only is it a change in environment, but we add this big animal, right? it can be something that they've never seen before or been around. So that's something that's going to be hard. And then, like I said, any addition of, you know, life experience, if they've had struggled with transition in the past, or even any diagnoses that may layer over that, like, autism, we see some resistance to change, ADHD. Are there other diagnoses you can think of that might be have difficulty with transition or resistance to change?
Yeah, I would say any anxiety or depressive disorders. And I think in addition here, when we look at those life experiences, it's really important to also focus on the trauma aspect, where people are, you know, coming in for services, and especially now being in post-COVID and the pandemic, it's really important to be mindful of how that person is presenting and within the stages of change that we'll talk about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we really are going to emphasize the importance of evaluation and, like Kelly said, collecting that good history of things that they're already coming here to us with. So, Kelly, do you want to talk a little bit about some things we're going to collect in our history?
Yeah, so when we look at the history, we're going to really look at, are they have they experienced change in any other environments? Have we seen any changes within their school environment, within the home? And then just how they're initially presenting when they're coming to the facility and what that looks like. Have we noticed any difficulties with the transition? So being able to speak with parents or guardians on what those transitions from task to task look like. You can even collect collateral information if there are releases of information, you know, in order to be able to speak with the schools regarding what does transition within the school look like from task to task.
Mm-hmm.
There could be transition and kind of collecting that good history with difficulty with new people. So is this an individual that may have a little bit more hesitance when approaching somebody new and being mindful of what some of those techniques look like when experiencing a new facility and new people?
I think, too, it's especially important at facilities like what we do, because there are so many new people. Mm-hmm. Not only are they going to meet their new therapist for the first time or instructor, they're going to meet a leader, two sidewalkers, maybe an equipment person, and this horse. So there's going to be a lot of new things introduced. So asking the family, how do they handle maybe meeting people at the grocery store or, you know, any, like out in public, out in their daily life. Another thing to think about is sensory differences. So I always ask my participants that are coming in for evaluation, is there anything that they experience differently? So it could be noise, touch, you know, smell, you know, auditory information, anything like that. Because if we're experiencing any kind of sensory difference, that's going to make a transition to the arena or to the horse even that much more difficult, because we have a lot of new things, a lot of new smells and sights and sounds and all different kinds of things. So I always just ask, you know, is there anything that they're really sensitive to, or, you know, is there anything that you notice with the family, even if there's no diagnoses present, because we all have preferences. You know, I don't like super loud noises or super busy places. And that is something that can give us good information for when we transition them to the horse and start getting them into sessions.
Right. And then another piece when we collect a good history is to collect past trauma as well as any trauma that could have recently been happening. And so we think about trauma as not what is wrong with the individual, but what has happened to them when we look at that trauma history and different reactions. And I think it's really important to focus within the trauma piece is really looking at how they have coped with this trauma in past and present, and then being able to identify with that coping, what do those strengths look like?
Mm-hmm. So if we're looking at in an evaluation of maybe someone comes to you just for, you know, either for adaptive writing or even public writing, how would you pose that question to families without, you know, sometimes I think using the word trauma, people are like, well, I haven't had trauma, you know, but they probably have. Everybody's experienced some level of it. So is there a way that you describe that to families or help them through that so that you can gain the best history possible?
I think just phrasing it as any, if we're talking about something present within the past 30 days, have you seen any change in this individual? Has this individual gone through a transition where their reactions may be not within kind of a typical presentation for them?
Yeah, I always ask that question. Does this, you know, I'll go through kind of my rigmarole of things that we do. Everybody does a different, you know, set of things for their evaluations. But does this seem typical? Does this behavior seem typical for them? Are they interacting with me in a way that is seems normal to them? And then the last piece is kind of we need to start thinking about where they may currently be in the stages of change. So that seems foreign to you right now, but we're going to get into it here in just a little while. So that's a good thing to start thinking about at the evaluation, and that will help you build on what to expect for your session.
And typically when we look at the stages of change, historically the stages of change have been utilized within addiction treatment. But when we look at the stages of change, it's very behavioral focused. Mm-hmm. And so being able to identify what stage that individual is coming in for services can be extremely helpful to know how to then respond and to help with the resistance or the hesitance for sessions and around the horses.
That's right. So as we start to think through all of these questions, I always like to say that if you get a yes, or if you get a response that, you know, is making you start to think like, I wonder what that looks like or how that's going to work. Ask the family. They know that person absolutely best. So ask the caregiver or whoever's present in the evaluation, how do you help them? So I think that's a really important piece that sometimes people often forget is, does Johnny struggle meeting new people? Yes, he, you know, gets really upset and, you know, maybe gets shy or whatever. Okay, well, the question doesn't end there. Then I think we need to go one step further and say, oh, well, how do you help them through that? How do you, you know, how do you best cope with new people? Or how do you best cope with when Johnny hears the vacuum and he gets really upset? Because that's going to help us start to build our toolbox for what we can help with during their sessions. Mm-hmm.
And if the family isn't able to identify some of that past history and be those good historians, it can be important to reach out and collect additional collateral information based on the releases that you have or releases that could be put in place to collect that. So that way you're getting that good history for that participant.
Absolutely. So just continuing this importance of evaluation, do they have any behaviors, quote unquote, that we should be aware of? I like to just put a plug in there that just because we use the word behaviors, I think that can often have a negative connotation. You know, that person has behaviors, quote unquote. All behaviors are, they're just a reaction to something that happened to us. It can be positive. It can be negative. Anything that we do in life is connected to a behavior. But for purposes of this, we're going to be asking if they have behaviors, what are they? So I think ones that we're really looking at, especially in our area, is self-harm, harming others, harming animals, that kind of thing. Any other kinds of behaviors you would be
looking at? So when we think about self-harm, you may also hear the term self-injurious behaviors is when we look at the DSM and some of the new language that is being cited as well. And that could be from picking, scratching, hitting self, it could be cutting when we look at some of those self-injurious behaviors that individuals could present with.
Mm-hmm. And I think harming others, especially in times of distress or them being uncomfortable, is something we have to look at because our participants are surrounded by our volunteers. So not only us as therapists and instructors, obviously we're there to help our participants and are less, I'm not concerned about a participant hurting me. I'm there to help them. Of course, we want to keep everyone safe, but we really have to keep our volunteers and our horses safe as well. So we need to know how to manage those behaviors. Other things is to consider are just things that might be disruptive in other ways, like to the horse or our volunteers or the therapist, especially things like screaming, you know, rocking, flapping, crying, anything that might be a little bit more above what we might consider, I guess, typical behavior for them.
Mm-hmm. And if there are concerns regarding that, you could work with the families and look at a safety plan, wellness plans to be able to put in place prior to those services as well, to really prepare for those reactions to happen, because they will happen. Let me say that again. They will happen. And so when you're looking at session facilitation, it's being mindful that it may not necessarily happen today or tomorrow, but planning for those obstacles to present themselves.
I cannot say that enough. You might have a family that says, well, you know, sometimes, but it hasn't happened in a long time. Well, maybe that's because they're really comfortable in their environment and they haven't had any, you know, things that have caused or given them an opportunity. Well, now we're going into this whole new environment, a whole new set of stressors. We just need to be prepared for anything to happen. And just letting the family know that it's absolutely okay to have those behaviors and to have feelings, big feelings. It's okay. We just have to help them feel comfortable and relax and ultimately keep everybody safe, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, so after we collect our history and do whatever testing you might do or anything like that, we're going to move into a live equine evaluation. So the key here is to start to build some of that rapport and trust, right, Kelly? We're going to meet and greet our horse. So before we even mount or before we even do anything, we're going to be kind of feeling out how this process is going to go. We're going to set up our expectations and really talk through the whole process, let them know how we're going to mount, where we're going to mount, you know, really just talk through the whole thing so that they, your participants understand. Anything else you would do kind of prior to a mount or anything like that when you're doing an evaluation, Kelly?
I think just being mindful of the environment in general, just making sure that it's a safe and supportive environment. So if you start seeing some reactions from the participants, being mindful to, you know, practice some grounding calming techniques if you, before, you know, moving on to kind of the next stage when we look at the live equine evaluation.
Yeah. And I think we're kind of speaking here to, so our live equine evaluation as we, you know, have already determined that the transition might be difficult or there might be some form of resistance. What's really going to help those participants is kind of those things. So like you said, you know, setting up the expectation, but also being prepared to implement some strategies if we need to, which we'll talk about more here in just a little bit. If this process is going to be too difficult, we need to have an alternative available. So we have an equisizer. You can see his picture there. He's the best. He's the easiest horse in our herd to manage. He is great for our kids that might have a little bit of fear or apprehension, because obviously he's not real, but we can still mount and move and do all of the things. Mini horses. We have four mini horses in our barn, and those are a cool transition. I know you've kind of worked quite a bit with our mini horses in kind of this particular situation, Kelly, haven't you? And then I think creating safe distance is another kind of alternative we could use. If you don't have many horses or an EQ or anything like that available, how can we, I guess, dip our toe while staying safe and still determining where we're at in those stages of change?
Have you heard about Hetra's mentoring program? 30 years ago, Hetra started with one participant and a handful of volunteers. Today, we're a large, thriving organization that wants to share our experience with you. We know that the work you're doing is extremely beneficial, but we also know how incredibly difficult it can be. Let us help you understand all aspects of your program, from volunteer coordination, horse management, finances, fundraising, and everything in between so that you can sustain a successful, thriving organization. Get started now with a free 15-minute consultation. All you have to do is a quick survey and we'll match you with the best HETRA staff member for your needs. Go to hetrauniversity.org now and click on mentoring.
Okay, so before we kind of dive into those stages, let's talk a little bit about what this can look like. What does resistance or apprehension to anything, not just horses, but to anything, what does that look like? Kelly, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so one of the first reactions you may see is some disengagement from the participant. This could be them completely, you know, shutting down and presenting as silent within the session. It could present as kind of just an avoidant communication. You may see the different kind of facial expressions where they're looking off, or, you know, maybe around mm-hmm. the arena or around the barn to be able to avoid that communication, making that eye contact with the instructor participant. Disengagement could look like some of those self-injurious behaviors mm-hmm. and yeah. the acting out behaviors and just presenting with just kind of that increased emotion. So when they are presenting with those increased emotions, it's again, you know, kind of reverting back to what's going to help kind of create that safety and that supportive environment for them to feel comfortable mm-hmm. to be able to reduce that resistance.
Absolutely. And I think that this is kind of where that these beginning stages of when you're starting to see these things is asking the family, is this normal behavior? Is this, mm-hmm. you know, typical for them? When they're in a new environment, or, you know, maybe the family's never seen that before. So all good things to look for.
Yeah. And then being able, I think it's important to follow up with the family to identify if there is an intervention that works, mm-hmm. To be able to help kind of ground and calm them to re-engage their focus.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So one thing we do know about, fear and resistance and apprehension is that it can block participant change and create or increase resistance to writing or task transition. So they could just be scared of just things they don't understand. And I think that's totally normal, especially if they come to us with no writing experience. Like we said before, it can just be a little scary. So how can we assist with fear of the unknown? We at HETRA always do a new participant tour. Really, it's just an opportunity to see what we do, see the environment, and kind of start to think about what would my participant look like in this environment? Do we think it would be successful, or what barriers or things might we have? Talking through the expectations can help with fear of the unknown, right? I think, is there a specific kind of recipe you use for expectations, Kelly, when you're talking through this process?
Well, I always talk through it with both the parent, the caregiver, and then the participant as well, mm-hmm. and being able to explain in detail what those expectations look like from the start of the session and then towards the conclusion of the session. Mm-hmm. And if we need to offer pictures or just different handouts to be able to explain what that process looks like, we definitely can, because mm-hmm. we're going to go based on that participant's needs and their learning style.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I use a lot of videos, especially like a video of somebody riding with my kids on the autism spectrum. I feel like visuals are really powerful and they can really set up an expectation well. Validating feelings, gosh, that can just be huge, I think, mm-hmm. for fear. Just saying, hey, it's okay. Mm-hmm. I see you and it's okay to be scared. And like you said, Kelly, kind of how do we build that trust, support, or rapport, and then support them through that process, right?
And I think when they're presenting with some of that fear or any emotion, like you identified, really being able to validate those feelings, but being mindful of our own emotions at that time, mm-hmm. Being the therapist or the instructor and the instructor, and how our communication is coming across to that participant as well, because we don't want to escalate that person. We want to help to de-escalate, help create that safe, supportive environment, mm-hmm. So that way they can be successful.
That's right.
In their session.
And sometimes it helps just to make it fun. So I like to, in my evaluation, something I didn't say earlier, is when I collect the history, I like to just ask, hey, what does this person like? Or what do you like? What do you enjoy? You know, if with my little kids, they might say, oh my gosh, you know, Johnny loves dinosaurs. He can't get enough of them.
well, if we're struggling a little bit to really transition, maybe we just need a little bit of motivation, a little bit of fun. And I might say, well, let's go on a scavenger hunt for dinosaurs or something we can use to kind of make it fun, transition and motivate while building that rapport. Okay, Kelly, how can we stay prepared?
So how do we prepare for the negative emotions associated with this resistance? One of the ways is to really recognize and validate those feelings and help them experience them. Mm-hmm. And so we're not looking to distract this participant right away from feeling that emotion, but how do we help them experience it right then and there to be able to work through some of that apprehension or resistance? Mm-hmm. And then that way they can see that they have a support. We're their cheerleader there within their session and for their treatment. And it could even be helpful if we model some of what that looks like. So if they're experiencing something, to help create that safety, to show them that we're right there experiencing it with them and how we can work through it together.
Mm-hmm.
So being able to, again, identify what coping skills, you know, do they use that are successful in helping to reduce and kind of stabilize those feelings. And then again, how can we model that? So collecting that good history and being able to get out those coping skills, and then just getting to know your participant will help with what can work as well. And always consider the environment and be mindful of creating that safe and supportive environment for not just the participant, but everybody else and the horse as well.
So a big thing to keep in mind, I think, when we have folks that are experiencing difficulty with this transition are, what are your goals? So ask the family, ask the caregiver, or ask the participant, what are your goals? I think I always kind of start with, let them know the plan and ask them if it's okay to take it slow. So if we're really struggling to transition to a live horse, what are some things we can do to take that process more slowly? How long might it take? And then what are the options? So let them know that whatever options are available within your facility. For us here at HETRA, we might, instead of just jumping right into riding, you know, because we're having some of those difficulties, we might do some ground lessons. We might groom, we might just get to know our horse through that way. What other kinds of ground lessons or things do you use to transition, Kelly?
Yeah, I would utilize just being able to walk through the barn and experience what is inside the barn and also what is outside the barn as well to help them get really comfortable within that environment.
Yeah, absolutely. Using EQ, we use EQ. So that's an example of, you know, taking it slow. Mini horses, we said that earlier. Mm-hmm. All kinds of things we can do. So is the family okay with that? Or are they, you know, really chomping at the bit to get them riding? Is self-regulation or emotional management a goal? So you might have a multitude of reasons that families might seek services from your facility. And it depends on if you're a therapist or if you're an instructor. I think this is particularly important for those of you that are instructors, because they might, you know, the family might not have come to you with the inkling that transition might be an issue. So is that regulation and emotional management a goal for the family? Kelly, do you have anything to add for that? I mean, I think for you as a therapist, that's probably mostly always the goal, right?
Right. Yeah. And then I explain with the self-regulation piece, when I look at those social emotional concepts, being able to break it down for the family and what specific interventions could look like to be able to eventually get to that self-regulation or emotional management goal, and the length of time that it takes with these interventions and sessions.
That's right, because we don't know how long it's going to take. Mm-hmm. And that's the truth. It could be two sessions and we're riding. It could be, you know, months of really hard work to get to where we need to be. So what does success look like to that participant or to that family? Is it that kind of goes back to, what is your goal? So is the goal for them to just get comfortable and just try something new? So maybe it's fine if they just groom, or they not just, but if they, you know, participate in grooming, or they do some other things around the barn, maybe that's, you know, successful for them. Or is the success truly you want them to get on and ride, and that's what the family wants? So always asking them kind of what success looks like.
And I think with looking at success is, what is manageable and achievable
right
within the environment and their session. And when we kind of, you know, look at that length of time. So really breaking down that success into those smaller pieces to help them be successful with that goal setting.
That's right. And I think weighing pros and cons are really helpful when it comes to that, right? So I don't know, Kelly, if you want to talk a little bit about how to manage that with the family. So you might have someone that comes in and says, you know, I want my, we'll just say child in this instance, to be writing in a month. But you're kind of thinking in your head after meeting this participant, it might take longer than that. Mm-hmm. How do you navigate that with the family?
Right. I am a big believer in having constant communication mm-hmm. with the parents or guardians regarding the intention for session and then also how session went mm-hmm. and to be able to have that consistent communication. So that way they're aware of where we're at in terms of that treatment progress and being able to work towards goal success. Mm-hmm. And so being able to identify what are some of the strengths within the session and how treatment is going and being able to focus on areas of opportunity. So I'm a person that is very strength-based. So instead of using kind of improvement, we look at opportunities mm-hmm. And those obstacles as challenges, you know, for growth with those opportunities. So really making sure to have that consistent communication with the family so they're up to date on what goal progress looks like.
Mm-hmm. So let's kind of look at this in two ways. So if the goal is really to participate and just be present and participate in activities, we're going to take it slow and we're going to know our coping skills. So really working hard with the family, caregiver, whoever, to identify those, even if we need to identify some ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Be prepared to spend extra time on the small stuff. So in the waiting area or even just on the mounting block or just wearing the helmet, those things need to be looked at as not just those things, but as pieces to this puzzle that are ultimately going to lead us to success, right?
Right. And I think it's important to also review your perception of the small stuff, because mm-hmm. even though I may sometimes perceive something as small, it could be major for that participant and for that family. For this individual to have that continual exposure and opportunity to have those smooth transitions or be able to work on some of that resistance and apprehension through those small things.
That's right. And I think especially as instructors, we get in such a good rhythm of, you know, our participants come right in, they get mounted, we, you know, get going or whatever. But don't neglect or, you know, underestimate some of those bigger steps for those participants. Try to always end on a good note. So whatever that is, even if we made it in the door of the barn today without, you know, having a big emotional response, or we did a good job using our coping skills to help us calm, whatever it is, always end on a good note and try to, like you just said, Kelly, not think about what is good for that participant, not necessarily what you might think mm-hmm. is progress, right?
Right.
And then we're going to use the stages of change to guide you. So stay tuned. We're going to get there, I promise. And then always keeping the goal in mind. So even taking these small steps, whatever it is, just keep that end goal for both the participant and the family. So kind of the other, you know, flip side of that coin is if the family or the participant says, you know, really, it'd be great if I could ride or I could do whatever, but honestly, I just want to get more comfortable with change. I just want to feel less anxious or, you know, less stressed or whatever it is. So what might that kind of protocol look like? I'll let you take it, Kelly.
Yeah. So we're going to support each participant through the change process and really begin to manage that resistance, that apprehension to help them be successful and be able to work towards that goal completion. We really want to look at how we're responding, how the participants are responding, also how the parents, guardians, families are responding mm-hmm. Throughout a session and really look at enhancing kind of those coping strategies so we can help this individual move through those stages of change.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we look at the stages of change, we're looking at how do we enhance that motivation? How do we help inspire that change for the individual? And as we're looking at these the six stages of change by Protasa and DiClemente, what we're really going to be, you can focus on the stages of change just being if we're focusing on like resistance or that apprehension, but just being mindful that you can utilize this model with several different areas that you would like to focus on for those areas of opportunity.
And I think we can kind of, as we're going through this, talk about it too, but I really like these six stages of change because it's applicable not just to any big major thing. Like I might be terrified to get on a horse, but it can be anything like learning something new. We might be already riding and now we're going to move to the canter or the lope and I'm having some feelings about that. So I want to encourage everyone to think about this isn't just resistance to, you know, big major, you know, the horse, but like as you might think about it, but it could be anything that the participant experiences as a big change.
Right. And being mindful that as we're working through these stages, that you can cycle through the stages. So just because you feel like you've completed one stage and you're increasing that motivation and inspiration to begin transitioning into a different stage, knowing that life can happen and stress can happen, that could impact kind of that motivation for change where we can cycle throughout the stages.
I know it seems like we're cutting you off from a good thing, but we're encouraging you to go and listen to the rest of the webinar by clicking on the link in the show notes below. Remember that this is a much bigger, larger conversation that Kelly and I had, and we dive much further into the six stages of change and give lots of examples and case studies on some participants that were experiencing resistance to change. So if you want to hear the rest of that, click on the link in the show notes below or head over to our Facebook page called Not Just a Pony Ride, and you can access more. If you're listening to this not in live time or sometime in 2023, then go over to hetrauniversity.org, click on demand webinars, and you can find the Resistance to the Horse full length feature there. We're giving this webinar to you guys as a token of our appreciation for being a loyal listener to the podcast, and we hope that you will share this with some of your friends in the EAS community or those that want to know more. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts. I hope you had a happy Thanksgiving and enjoy your holiday season. Thanks for listening to another episode. Until the next one launches, stay connected to our community by joining the Not Just a Pony Ride Facebook group. There we share exclusive educational content, answer your questions, and review new and exciting developments for the EAS community. Don't forget, if you have suggestions for future episode topics or a lead on a great guest that you think our audience would enjoy, click on the link in the show notes or visit us at hetrauniversity.org. This podcast is presented by Hetra University, an educational arm of the Heartland Equine Therapeutic Riding Academy. Hetra University's mission is to provide high-quality educational offerings to our participants and the EAS community. If you'd like to help us work toward our mission, you can make a donation by visiting us online at hetra.org. Again, I can't thank you all enough for helping Hetra change lives one stride at a time.